This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Even in the best of times, the percentage of U.S. adults who show up to see an opera is tiny. This year, for obvious reasons, what was already a small number has dwindled to practically nothing. But that doesn't mean this art form can't speak to this moment. America's 100-plus professional companies are at a crossroads, thinking hard about relevance and how they rebound after the pandemic. It's the perfect time to inject some fresh thinking into an art form that some Americans love and many others consider inaccessible. In May, the composer Anthony Davis won a Pulitzer Prize for this work called The Central Park Five.
The police, the DA.
Exactly 3 weeks after the Pulitzer Prize Board honored Central Park Five, George Floyd was killed by police in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And as with so many other industries, his death reignited a conversation that was already stewing in the opera world about diversity and representation. And that's going to be one part of our conversation today. Let's welcome to 1A Anthony Davis. He's the composer of the Central Park Five and a number of other operas, including X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X. He also teaches at UC San Diego. Anthony, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And also with us is the mezzo-soprano opera singer, Janae Bridges, and she's agreed to sing for us today, so we'll hear that a little later. Janae, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So American opera fans may be dedicated, but for the past few decades, they've been a pretty small group overall. And of that relatively small group, most were white, and a majority of them are over 55. So I'm curious how each of you got into it. Anthony, what drew you to opera?
Well, I think I spent 10th grade in Italy. I was my father had a Fulbright to teach in Italy, and so I lived in Italy for that year. And I had a wonderful teacher who introduced me to taught a philosophy class about Nietzsche and Kierkegaard and existentialism. And I read The Birth of Tragedy, and actually through philosophy, I became interested in opera.
Janae, what about you?
I had a teacher in high school, I was a junior in high school, identify my gift. I was in the high school choir, and she said, "Hey, you have a natural gift. What do you think about the idea of studying privately?" And so I agreed. I started studying classical voice privately, and I just absolutely fell in love with this new world. And then when I saw that there were black opera singers that existed, I thought, oh my goodness, what is this? I need to know more.
Well, according to Opera America, the top four works performed during the 2018-2019 season were La Boheme, La Traviata, Carmen, and The Barber of Seville, all written in the 1800s. So how good of a job is the opera world doing at elevating more diverse and contemporary works, Janae? Anthony, you want to jump in?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that they could do a lot better job. I think that it's been proven. I think since when I did X was in 1986, and that was one of the most successful operas ever produced at City Opera, New York City Opera. I think that with new music that speaks to today and talks about the subjects and what's happening in our world, I think could have a tremendous appeal in opera. And opera, I think, is an art form that can speak to that, to those things.
And Janae, as someone giving voice to these works, what are your thoughts?
I absolutely agree with Anthony. I have to say that I love singing Carmen, and I love singing the classic works and the traditional works that we hear. However, there needs to be an expansion of stories that are told, and it's starting to happen, but in this moment that we have where we're not actually on stages and we're not able to gather right now, I think this is the perfect time for us and companies to really reimagine the work that they're presenting so that it can become more accessible and more inclusionary for everyone. So to answer your question, yes, it can greatly improve.
Well, opera,
and it is slowly, but yeah.
Well, opera is predominantly white on stage, but as we said, also off stage and among leaders in the opera world and its audiences. Janae, what discussions about race are happening among you and your colleagues?
Well, these discussions about race and racism and equity and inequality have been happening for a long time, primarily amongst my Black colleagues and even colleagues of color, but mostly Black colleagues. And so we've been having these conversations for a long time. They're not new. However, now we do feel like people are hearing us and even listening. So it's a great opportunity for us to really just be more inclusive. And I have had conversations with many opera companies about how that can happen. It's quite exhausting, I must say, because I didn't actually sign up for it. I'm an artist, I'm a singer. However, I am also an ambassador, not only for the art form, but for humanity and for equality. So I do try to use my voice and my platform to help make that happen. And I'm happy to say that companies are making moves. It's slow, but I feel like people have a new set of ears that I've never experienced before. So I'm hopeful.
Well, Matt tweets, opera is facing many difficulties, but the future belongs to the composers, librettists, singers, directors, and other performers that figure a way to keep doing something despite large performance bans in place around the country. Janae, have you found ways to continue to practice your craft during the pandemic?
Absolutely. Yes, I have. It's not always easy because I do miss the stage terribly, but I've done many virtual projects since the pandemic started. And at first I was kind of doing them, like on my cell phone and stuff. And I thought, wait, if this is going to be our stage, if the internet is going to be our stage right now, these performances need to be of a high quality. So I have collaborated with LA Opera, Chicago Opera, Washington National Opera, and I've done some very interesting projects. One is coming out soon with WNO called Monuments of Hope, where I go around to different monuments in DC and pair them with American songs by composers that have been silenced. And for me, that's been really an incredible experience to bring light to these composers and women composers and Black composers. So yes, I've been actually very, very busy, busier than I ever thought that I would be in a pandemic.
Well, Anthony, let's listen to a bit more of your Pulitzer Prize winning work, The Central Park Five. And Anthony, that's actually a clip we're going to use a little later in the show. That's not your work. But why did you think opera was the right medium to tell this really tragic story of the Central Park Five? These are the five African-American and Latino teenagers who were wrongly convicted of raping a woman in Central Park.
Well, I thought actually when I was presented with the libretto by Richard Wesley, when I read it, I just knew it could be an opera, because also voicing the pain and how they were feeling, and also the idea of the ensemble singing too, as Five was worked really well with opera, and in a sense also taking it out of the realistic realm. To be more expansive, to look at all the forces that are behind it, also be able to depict Donald Trump on stage was I thought he was a very operatic figure, you know, almost like a tenor Buffo in some ways, but also much more sinister. So I thought it was for me it was the scale of the story and how that story affected everyone in terms of how it was really the genesis of the Black Lives Matter movement. I felt it was a very important cultural moment too, something that could definitely be told through opera.
We're talking to Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Anthony Davis and American mezzo-soprano opera singer Janae Bridges. And Janae has agreed to sing us into the break. So Janae, if you'll step away from your phone now for the sound quality, please, and begin singing This Is Habanera from Carmen. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.
We are the freaks. We are the freaks who on the night we are the freaks.
We are the Blade Brothers who can't be
killed. We're here with the composer of the opera, The Central Park Five, which we're hearing right now, Anthony Davis. He won this year's Pulitzer Prize for that work. Also with us, mezzo-soprano singer Janae Bridges, who we heard from just before the break. There are more than 100 opera companies in cities across the U.S., and around 3 million people attend performances every season. But performances have been on hold since the pandemic began and aren't returning anytime soon. Is this a catastrophic event for the most expensive of the performing arts, or is it an opportunity to grow opera into something more diverse, innovative, and accessible? Let's add another voice to the conversation. Mark Skorka is the president and CEO of Opera America, a member organization for the opera community. And we'd love to hear from you, too. Do you love or hate opera? We want to hear why. You can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. Mark, give us an idea of how popular opera is in America in terms of jobs, audience, and revenue.
Well, good morning, and thanks so much for having me on the program today. It's been a fascinating discussion so far. So, yes, there are over 150 opera companies in the United States in cities large and small. And as you stated, there are several million people who attend every year, some of them very frequently, some of them once or twice a year. The entire industry has a turnover of about $1.2 billion, it's billion with a B, and we employ about 25,000 people on a full-time and part-time basis across the country. Some of those people are administrators. Of course, some of those are singers like Janae. Not all of them sing as beautifully as Janae. And a lot of them are artisans. They're stitchers, wigs and makeup specialists, costumers, technicians backstage, many, many different talents combined to put on an opera performance.
Well, the Metropolitan Opera in New York, as we said, announced 3 weeks ago that it's canceling its upcoming season, keeping it dark at least through next September. What can recovery look like for the opera world here in America?
Well, it's very difficult to know. And there's, as we know, just in terms of the pandemic in general, not only when will audiences be able to come back into the theater? But even before audiences begin to come back, when will we be able to rehearse again? Keep in mind that, you know, a grand opera performance, and it's important, and we hope we get to it in the discussion, that not all opera is grand. But if you think about the Metropolitan Opera, our largest opera company, the orchestra of 60 or 70 or 80 musicians will fit into the orchestra pit. A chorus of 50 or 60 people have to rehearse in a rehearsal hall, and singers singing deeply from the diaphragm are singing that they love one another face to face. We know from all of the reports about the pandemic that some of this activity is particularly dangerous in terms of spreading the virus. So we need to see that there are precautions being taken in terms of rehearsal practice and performance practice, but that the vaccine is available so all of these artists are safe, they can rehearse, and then they might be able to perform for an audience that is equally safe. So it is going to be quite a while until we see this again.
Janae, we were talking before about some of the online opportunities you've had to continue to practice your art, but what are you hearing from other performers? Because you all mostly work on a contract basis.
Yes, well, it's very difficult. And my conversation, you know, amongst my colleagues have kind of been a wide range, but I would say most people are worried. You know, this opera houses and companies are dark right now, but we still have lives. We still have to support ourselves. We have families, and it's not, you know, it's not a hobby. It's our way of making a living. And so it's scary for people because we work, you know, on a contract basis. Some of us are fortunate enough to be contracted 3 and 4 and 5 years out, but some people are not that fortunate and, you know, go from engagement to engagement. And so right now it's just a very scary time. It's very unsettling. And I really think that some people are going to change their professions, not because they want to be, but because they will be forced to financially. And so it's really sad. But I think, you know, I try to encourage my colleagues that this time will end. We won't be in this predicament forever. And to keep consistent with your practicing and learn roles, do things that you've always wanted to do. I'm using this time personally to work on projects that I've always wanted to.
Well, we're hearing from lots of you. Mary tweets, my taste for opera is pretty limited. Consumptive sopranos singing 7 pages about how they're dying always felt ridiculous. Plots taking the backseat to vocal glorification left me feeling meh. But seeing American bass Sam Raimi and Don Giovanni finally made me believe in Don Juan. And here's what one of you left in our inbox.
Hi, this is Joanna calling from Sarasota, Florida. I love opera. I went to school to learn how to sing, and I'm very sad and disappointed to see these theaters close, of course, but it's very important for us to have the conversation about the elitism of opera, not only from the perspective of the audience, but from the perspective of the creators. It's very difficult to see opera if you don't have lots of money, and it's very difficult to perform in opera if you don't have lots of money. Oftentimes, these artists are asked to pay to audition hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, just to be told no.
Joanna, thanks for that message. I'd love to hear your responses to what she had to say. Janae, I'll start with you.
Okay, yes, I completely agree with what Joanna said. It is incredibly expensive to be an opera singer. You know, you have to fly to auditions sometimes. You have to pay for coachings to prepare for auditions and for roles and oftentimes pay in advance for your housings when you're on an engagement. And so we're really reliant on that money coming back. I would agree, it needs to become more accessible for the majority, for everyone. And I think that if we diversify every single position in the opera field, that will inherently, you know, bring a more diverse and inclusive audience in and different ways of thinking, you know. Even it starts with the board, I believe also. If we all have people that look the same, that think the same, that to me is really a disadvantage to what we should be trying to do, and that is spread these beautiful stories and this beautiful art form to everyone. So I think that, you know, it has definitely been elitist, and I think that companies are taking the necessary steps to break that down. I don't know if it's urgent enough. I think it can always be better. So, you know, as a performer, I'm doing my job to make it more inclusive, and I think by being an African-American female, that is already speaking volumes. But there are always more steps to take.
Anthony, I really want to hear your perspective here as well as a composer.
Well, as a composer, I started creating works for African Americans, you know, with X and Amistad and now Central Park 5. And I think that it's important to in a way that to tell these stories through opera, so that opera also the subtext of that is to transform opera from being the elitist form it's been, you know, so it's not just some extension of, you know, Western European thinking, and that it represents, you know, a broader range of views and ideas about who we are and what our culture is. And I think there's a tremendous possibility to recast opera in that light, to make opera into a uniquely American form.
Has it been challenging for you as a composer to get your works out there, to get them recognized and performed?
Well, sure. I think that one of the biggest challenges is to get a second or third performance of an opera. There's kind of an energy that goes into a premiere. You know, I've done premieres, I've had the good fortune to have my operas produced by some of the major companies in America, like New York City Opera, Lyric Opera Chicago, Opera Theater of St. Louis, to name a few. But I think that, to develop become part of the repertoire, one of the problems is so few American works and new works become part of the repertoire of opera companies, and it's very important, I think, that to see that, you know, that a larger part of the season is devoted to new work and American works, and I think that new works I think also bring in new audiences. Mm-hmm. Like in my case, I know that at Long Beach when I did Central Park 5, and then in New York City Opera when I did X, and in Chicago, the opera audience was quite different from my operas. You know, New York, there was 50% African American house sold out, and in Long Beach it was also far more diverse than the usual opera audience. So we don't have to settle for opera being, you know, just for white people or just for the rich. I think if we think about the content of opera and direct it and also embed opera into the community as being a vital part of the community. And I think there are companies that have done a great job of that, you know, and when I did my production at Long Beach, we did a lot of community activities. So I got involved with the Innocence Project and other things, and the ACLU. Also, and I think that what that does is realize that opera can speak to these issues, and also we can be a responsible part of the community in furthering the dialogue and discussion of very important issues.
I'm Jen White.
And in Chicago, I did many school events too as well.
I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. That's Anthony Davis. He's the composer of the Central Park 5 and a number of other operas, including X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X. He also teaches at UC San Diego. Anthony, thanks so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you.
And I want to bring another voice into this conversation, Yuval Sharon. He's the artistic director at the Michigan Opera Theater in Detroit and the founder and artistic director of The Industry, an opera company in L.A. He won a MacArthur Genius Grant in 2017. Yuval, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you so much. So glad to be here.
I want to start things off with this tweet from Matt, who says, I hope that most of the discussion will focus on the companies acting in limited, responsible fashions rather than the companies that are completely shuttering for the year. The Met is not equal to opera. And I love your thoughts about what Matt tweets us there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, no two opera companies are quite the same. And I think that poses some significant challenges in trying to grapple with this pandemic. When I was appointed the artistic director for Michigan Opera Theater, part of my appointment was also to try and come up with projects that could happen outside of the opera house, which is something I do a lot with my company in Los Angeles, The Industry. And so, you know, in a situation where we can't be in the opera house, I asked the company to maybe turn its gaze across the street to their parking center and to think about that structure and that particular sort of half-outdoor scenario as a opportunity for us to have opera get out of the opera house and into our everyday lives. And that is what we are preparing for. We're opening a live performance of Twilight Gods is the name of the project. It's an adaptation of Wagner's Götterdämmerung. And it happens in the parking center with 8 audience members at a time in their cars, listening to the live singers on FM radios and moving from level to level of the parking center to get a 60-minute experience of what is normally an, a 6-hour opera. But is, I hope, one example of how opera can, you know, can be flexible. We tend to think of opera in very kind of ossified, rigid terms. And I think that the real future of opera is as a flexible art form, as one that is, it doesn't necessarily have to be more nimble, but that the raw elements of a particular performance can find a lot of adaptations. Mm. And that's what this particular performance, I hope, will convey.
Well, speaking from experience, a pandemic is an interesting time to start a new job, especially in the performing arts. Why did you take the job in Detroit? What do you think opera can do there?
You know, I got very excited about this job when I really, in relation to everything going on at the in with the pandemic and also with Black Lives Matter, you know, I just thought to myself, this is a time of real change, and it's also a time where real change is not just possible, but is necessary. And to everything that Janae and Anthony and Mark were saying, you know, I'd like to just add that if after this is all over and we can go back into opera houses, if we go back into the opera house and we see something that just feels like what it was before the pandemic, I think we'll have lost out on a tremendous opportunity to really move the conversation forward, not just for opera, but for the arts in this country and what the arts can do for us socially. And I think opera has a major role to play in that, if we maybe veer away from the notion of opera as a colonialist holdover and start to think about it truly as an American expression. So that's, you know, the opportunity to do that in Detroit, in a city that also, you know, is at such an amazing musical crossroads for this country. It just seemed like a chance to really help affect major change. And so that is in many ways my mission with this role.
Mark, what are you seeing opera companies doing right now to reach audiences who don't have lots of extra dollars to spare?
Well, one of the incredible outcomes of this COVID crisis has been the inventiveness that we've seen at many of our opera companies. And that includes drive-in, opera theater drive-ins. They're doing it in San Diego, Austin, Texas. They did it upstate New York in Kingston. Operas in big custom design tents that they're doing in Atlanta. There's the street stage that Boston Lyric Opera is moving around the city of Boston. So right now there is a huge amount of inventiveness going on in the way opera companies can perform. They're outside of the opera house. What other venues can they find? In addition, they're looking at film projects. There was a Tri-Cities Opera in Binghamton, a wonderful virtual reality opera project at Haymarket Opera in Chicago, a film project of Baroque opera. So right now, the inventiveness that is part of the opera art form is being demonstrated in all kinds of new ways. And I absolutely agree with Yuval that I hope that what we have developed through the crucible of COVID lasts into the recovery.
I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from our guests and from you in a moment. We're all about opera today on 1A. Tomorrow, we're working on a show that is out of this world. One of the most unexpected scientific discoveries of the year took place roughly 70 million miles away on Venus, a toxic gas that suggests there could be life out in the universe after all. But cosmologists are also excited about what they found on other moons. What questions do you have about these new discoveries and what it all might mean for space exploration? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. Are you now convinced that we are, in fact, not alone? Our number here on Earth is 855-236-1A1A. Or you can send us an audio file with our app, 1A Vox Pop, and we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1A. Let's get back to our conversation about the future of opera with mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges and Michigan Opera Theater Artistic Director Yuval Sharon and President of Opera America Mark Skorka. We're also hearing from you. Lauren in D.C. writes, I was excited to see the premiere of Blue, a new opera originally scheduled for spring 2020 at the Washington National Opera. It's about an African-American family in Harlem with a police officer patriarch and a son who was murdered by police. I was fortunate enough to see a short preview in March, and I'm looking forward to seeing the full opera when shows come back. And here's what Jane in Washington, D.C. left in our inbox.
I have loved opera since I was a young girl, when I could listen to the Metropolitan Opera on a very old-fashioned radio. The reason I love opera is I think the human voice is the best instrument. Critics, they just don't like it because it's not in English and they don't understand the story. But I don't think that's important. It's the music that is the story.
Thanks for your message, Jane. I'd love to hear from each of you what you love about opera, Janae.
Oh, wow. Well, there's so much, but I guess to narrow it down to a couple of things. I love creating... I love transforming myself into these different characters, into these different worlds. It informs me. It actually makes me more empathetic. And to actually see how music, and in particular the human voice, moves people and heals people, for me is just such a joy. And it's a huge reason why I'm so grateful to have this gift of voice and gift of opera. But I also just feel like opera has the ability to speak to people in a way that other art forms might not necessarily. And I think because it's often such a spectacle, you are you're actually like engaging so many different senses. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's an incredible experience to be on stage, but also to be an audience member. And it, I think the biggest joy for me is the ability that it has to expand minds and heal hearts.
Mark, what about you?
Gosh, two things. One is, I think opera examines fundamental human emotions, the most primary, primal human emotions, love and loss, anger, triumph and defeat. Through the intense dramatic setting of opera, these fundamental emotions are explored, but they're heightened through music, where words finally can't really convey the depth of the emotion. Music takes over and transports the listener. And I love that deep exploration that goes beyond words. I'd also say I'm awed by the human voice, the instrument. When Janae makes her remarkable sound, that's unamplified. She fills the hall with the sound of her body, the coordination of muscle and breath. And I am just in awe that the body itself is the instrument, and it has such power. So both that slightly athletic musical instrument of the voice, but this deep exploration of the emotions beyond where words can bring us.
Yuval, I'd love to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, well, I love what Janae and Mark had just said. I might just add that something that I have always loved about opera is its complexity, actually, and how much it resists a kind of easy definition. I think at the very beginning of this show, you mentioned that the word opera in Italian just means work. And I kind of love the fact that it's almost like, well, what do you call this crazy and unstable art form in which so many different kinds of art come together, where it's visual art, music, text, architecture, dance, fashion, all of that comes together, and it is not easily reducible. And I think there's a way to extend that into something that feels so refreshing for our day and age, where things feel really, really, clear cut in terms of you're either for or against certain things. And then it's across the board, for and against. You're either, canceled, or you're in on the right idea. But opera invites us into a space of a lot of complexity and ambiguity. And that's a very refreshing place these days.
Well, you were talking about the music and the dancing and the spectacle and the costumes. Mary emails this kind of basic question. Is there a difference really between musicals and opera? Wouldn't opera be more appealing to younger audiences if they were simply called musicals, Yuval?
I think that is a long-time question. I get that question a lot, and I never really know how to answer that because there's no, for me, there's not really a hierarchy of art forms. They just are quite different. Musicals will certainly appeal to a certain type of audience. And I would love for people that, I actually got into opera first by loving musicals when I was younger, and then realized that there was maybe another dimension to a kind of musically driven theatrical experience that might even transcend the story, that it kind of goes beyond just the narrative of what's happening on stage, but becomes about the multiple dimensions, as Janae said so beautifully, that something is happening in a kind of 360-degree experience that goes beyond any one of those levels. So I would think that if people already like musicals, I would love for them to give opera a chance, because I think that could be a really great stepping stone into a totally different kind of artistic universe.
Well, Jean writes on Facebook, in opera, I got carried away with the mixture of raw emotions, acting, set, and music to tell a story. The live drama on stage wins out over a recorded version. My all-time favorite is Carmen. I've seen it multiple times. And Kim writes this on Facebook. One of the things that upsets me about opera is that tenors are nearly always the good guys in the story. Lawrence Brownlee is the only black tenor I have seen in the recent Metropolitan operas. The bad guys in the stories are nearly always baritones and bassos. I've seen several black bassos, but this might not help anything because black men are almost always the villains in opera. Yuval, can you speak to Kim's critique there? I think we're having trouble with you. I'm sorry. Can you start your answer again?
Thanks. If you're looking at kind of,
Oh no, go ahead. We had a problem with your line for a moment.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, great. I think that what she was referring to might be really true of kind of 19th century Italian repertoire, where you get, you get people in kind of a conventional, conventional voices. But I think that when you look at American operas or English operas or operas of the 20th and now 21st century, I think you're seeing that every vocal type is recast in a lot of different ways. So I think that the language of opera is continuing to evolve, and that's what excites me very much, is thinking that opera as an art form is an emerging art form, and that's something that thrills me, and I think we're still on that path.
Mark, is there a distinction between how Europe understands and approaches opera in a way that's different than American opera?
Well, yes, there is a difference between Europe and the United States in that regard, because in Europe, the French, Italian, German opera literature is part of that cultural patrimony. In the United States, opera is or was an imported art form. It came over from Europe, and it isn't a foreign language. As a result of its not being actually a part of our DNA cultural patrimony, opera in the United States has a greater latitude to invent and reinvent. So there are more new works being performed in the United States today than any other country around the world. The operas are about issues that deal with the world around us. We are free to create a new form of opera, an American form of opera, because it isn't a part of our cultural inheritance from the 18th and 19th century. In Europe, of course, they have to respect that patrimony. It is their cultural inheritance, and they are really quite wed to performing a lot of the works from the canon because it's their canon. We have more flexibility.
Well, we're hearing from a lot of you, Matt. Well, we'll get to that in a second. But Paul emails, I've watched opera at my local movie theater when it was open. The shows are simulcast and cost $20 per seat instead of $300. And one listener shares this tip. Please mention that this is the 31st week of nightly opera streams from metopera.org. It's a great distraction from the local news and pandemic. I'm Jen White. You're listening to 1A. We're talking to mezzo-soprano Janae Bridges, Michigan Opera Theater Artistic Director Yuval Sharon, and President of Opera America Mark Skorka. And this message landed in our inbox from Matthew Shilvach. He's the General Director of the San Francisco Opera, one of America's largest, and it employs up to 1,000 people a year.
Opera companies are extraordinary microcosms of the whole art sector, bringing together all of the art forms. But our companies and our artists are hurting right now, with no clear indication of when we'll be able to get back to performances. In San Francisco, we can't even have a singer and a pianist together in the same room. The need for innovation and growth has never been stronger. We have a unique chance to experiment with the whole experience of opera. We must seize this moment to reimagine ourselves.
Mark, we got this question from Matt, who says, how concerned are you about permanent company closures around the country?
Well, it's a very good question, and of course we monitor that very carefully. At the moment, our opera companies have seen their budgets decline because they've canceled so many performances, and they are reinvesting in outdoor performances, film projects, and other interesting initiatives. The box office revenue for an opera company covers only a fraction of the actual cost of producing opera. So at the moment, with reduced income, no ticket sales, and reduced expense in that we're not performing in the opera house, we really are depending right now on the loyalty of the donors who make up an important part of the opera family. And we're hoping that the donor family stays with our opera company, stays with us through the coming months, and hopefully by the time we get to the summer or the early fall of 2021, we'll be back into a mix again of contributions and ticket income. But at the moment, our companies are holding strong, are doing everything to serve their communities, serve their publics, convene their stakeholders in virtual platforms, and hopefully maintain the loyalty we need to get to the other side of this crisis.
Yuval, you mentioned what opera might look like on the other side of this pandemic. What's your vision?
I hope that we can bring opera, forward into, the recovery from everything related to COVID, into an art form that really feels as progressive as all of the other arts in our world. I think that taking opera out of its own microcosm and into the larger performing arts sector seems really important to me, so that we don't see as much of a division between going to live music, at other concert venues, and thinking about opera or theater and dance, as these silos, but as part of one expression of who we are as a culture. I think that includes making sure that what happens on stage, both the people on stage, but everyone involved with the opera, represents the kind of diversity that we want to see in our future society. And included in that, an aesthetic progress as well, that we are not just kind of blindly and slavishly reproducing these pieces the way that we've seen them over and over again, but actually thinking about how these pieces can still speak to us strongly today without changing a note of the music. Directors and visual artists have an opportunity to really change our perspective of a piece as it performs live and connect it with our time and the city in which the opera is happening. And I think a huge increase in that kind of engagement is going to make sure that opera not just survives this, but also has a brand new chapter in this country.
Janae, what about for you as a performer and someone who's been having these conversations about how opera needs to change and grow. What do you hope it looks like on the other side of this?
Well, excuse me. I completely agree, and I love what Yuval and Mark have said. For me as a performer, I enjoy tremendously singing, these traditional works, but I want more stories to be told. I want us to represent, the diversity and the beauty of not only America, but of our world. And, you know, for me, when I walk into an opera house, I really do want to see more people that look like me. I want to see more women in power. I want to be conducted by a Black conductor. I've never sung in Porgy and Bess, but I've heard from my colleagues that it's just, it's very uncomfortable to be directed by a white person on how to be Black, you know? And I'm kind of like dumbing down, you know, how they've articulated it, but I completely agree. And so I think that, you know, in this moment, we have such an opportunity to reinvent, as we often do in America, and to evolve. So for me, I want to bring a more diverse audience, and I think that when you see yourself on stage, that inherently will happen.
That's Janae Bridges, an international mezzo-soprano opera singer. Also with us today, Yuval Sharon, the artistic director at the Michigan Opera Theater in Detroit. He's also the founder and artistic director of the industry in Los Angeles. And Mark Skorka, the president and CEO of Opera America. Thanks to you all. It was great to talk to you. Remember, we have a text club. We'll only ever send you one text a day. It's the fastest way to connect with us. Details about how to sign up can be found in the Ask 1A tab at the1a.org. Today's producer was Avery Kleinman. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A. Oh,